Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
You know your business better than anyone. So when you need finance to grow, you deserve a lender who understands too. Responsible finance providers look at the whole picture, the story behind the numbers, your plan and what you want to achieve. Our fair, flexible finance, decided by real people, not a computer, helps thousands of businesses every year. Find out more at findingfinance.org.uk. Finding Finance is a trading style of the Community Development Finance Association, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. A regulated credit broker and not a lender. We provide information only in respect of community development finance institutions and other finance providers, which may be available to you from our approved panel of lenders. Finding Finance. .org.uk.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. It's here we are again, Deserted Island. This, it's a Wednesday, a cold, cold Wednesday here in Sheffield Live, coming down your radio. Deserted Island, this, it's the show where we've tried to get people from Ireland now living in South Yorkshire, but we're over a year into the show and every single Irish person I've met, I've asked to come on the show. Most of them have, but I've run out of Irish people. So one of the... When I first started the show, one of the wonderful people that got in touch and said they enjoyed the show very much and they loved my Manchester accent hearing that was my old school friend, Richard Lawless. So I thought, why not have him on the show? So, good evening, he's here with us now. Hi, Rich.
Good evening. Hi, Ben. Thanks. How are you?
I'm all right, how are you?
Good, yeah.
After all this time. So
yes, nice to be here.
We're just saying it's at least 35 years, if not longer, since we last saw each other. So,
yep.
So it's a bit of a social experiment for you listeners to bear with us and see how we get on. Might hate each other, eh?
Yeah, but I can tell you in the last week since you told me about this show, I broke out in acne for the first time in about 35 years. Yeah, so I don't know where that came from.
Regressing to that teenage years,
yes,
when I last met you.
Yes, yeah. So that's nice, yeah.
It is, thanks for that. So he's travelled all the way up from Kent today,
yeah.
Which is nice of you. So we'll have to have a few beers after, and I'll show you the famous Irish Triangle pubs and do my best to get to see why I love Sheffield so much and why everyone else does.
All right, then. Okay, can do that.
Twist you around to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're still going to follow the format of Deserted Island Disc, which is basically talking about your life, and then you've picked some songs that kind of punctuate your life or mean a lot to you in your life.
Yeah, it's very hard to choose, isn't it? Because it's just five or six songs, and I've sort of thought quite a few different ones, but you have to choose some. What, do you want me to talk about them already?
No. Well, I was going to say, was music been a big part of your life then?
Definitely. I think, well, for me, I can't speak for everyone, but I'm the sort of person who drifts off into music all the time and goes on a magic carpet ride. So, and envisions things, where images to music and things. So, it is.
Cool. Yeah. So we should say what I do know about you. I mean, suppose we got in touch on Facebook maybe 2 years ago, 18 months ago, something like that. Anyway, we've been in touch on Facebook, and I get to see a bit of your world through Facebook, really. And you've done amazing travelling. So we kind of jump to the end. So you spent a lot of time living in Hong Kong, but lots of travelling. So we'll get to that bit for the listeners to see that perspective of seeing the world. But to start with, let's start at the beginning. So you grew up in the same bit of Manchester as me, obviously. Yeah. We went to the same primary school. But, what was life like back then in the early 70s in the city of Manchester?
Well, northern suburbs of Manchester. So my earliest memories, I suppose, are, like a lot of people our generation, with the old kind of coal fire and making those knots in the newspapers and trying to get warm in the morning, I think.
So you built your own fire, did that become your job at one point?
It seemed to have been, yes. Yeah, we did that. You know, just a very normal domestic thing, sort of mum, dad, two kids, and yeah, and you know, fairly happy, normal suburban life, I suppose. Yeah, and I mean, I remember going to school with you and what have you. You weren't at the nursery, though, were you?
No, I didn't go to the nursery school. Yeah, no, but I remember meeting you. I think in my head it was the first day at the new school. And I remember we played a little game on the playground at Pikeford Primary School, and I was holding your hand and turning round. We had a spinny round game. I'm not expecting you to remember that, Richard. I'm 5 years old, but I remember it.
No, I don't. I'm afraid not. That one slipped by me. But
It was a moment. Mm. It's funny, isn't it? There's moments that just stick in your mind.
There are, and
there's many more moments that totally go out of your mind.
Yeah. they're incredibly random, from what I can make out. Yeah. The random memories I have, I try and figure out what it was that made me remember that. Because you meet an old friend like yourself, and you'll sort of say, "Hey, do you remember that?" And they'll go, "No, why do you remember that?" Yeah. So I don't know. That's apart from the big events, which you have shared memories of.
Definitely the case. Mm. But for, I suppose, people that don't know, I mean, we grew up in a place called Blakely in North Manchester, and you must have had it throughout your life, and I have it all my life, that no one's ever heard of Blakely. So everyone knows Manchester, don't they? So, and then they go, "Oh, Manchester, yeah, you what bit of Manchester?" I used to live in Manchester, I often say.
Yes.
And they go, "Oh, Blakely," they go, "Oh, I've never heard of that."
Yeah.
Because
everyone
in Manchester goes generally to the south side.
Yes.
Where the students are.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's...
So you have to kind of approximate it for them and say, "Well, you remember Rochdale or something?" And, well, it's
Park,
halfway
say,
between
yeah.
the centre and there, or... It's near Heaton Park or something like that. And I've occasionally heard it on national TV or radio, and they call it Blakely.
Blakely, it's spelled Blakely, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
And we laughed, don't we?
Oh, we did. Yes.
But it was quite mostly, I mean, you and I lived in houses that were private houses. Like, mine was a terraced house and you were a bit posher, semi-detached, wasn't it?
Well, you see, my dad was a social climber. He'd moved out. His parents lived in... at the bottom of Blakely Village in those old terraces.
So he's proper Blakely from
generations. Yeah, yeah, and he did his best to kind of get out of that. He would never let us watch Coronation Street or anything like that.
What did he do, your dad?
He was an engineer at Francis and British Aerospace.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people were, weren't they? He was like a big part of that side of Manchester. Was quite industrial, wasn't it? Of like aerospace and ICI was on our doorstep.
Yeah,
we all got poisoned by ICI.
So I believe someone's. Yeah, I need to know more about that. Yeah, yes, I have heard about that. But yeah, dad was. He got drafted into the Air Force in the 50s.
Right.
I think, and he was like the first one of his family that had been abroad, and it changed his life a bit. He would tell me stories about it, and why it's Cyprus and Egypt. He was
That like National Service?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So so he was that generation.
In the mid-50s. I think he was one of the last years to do it, but there was a lot going on in Egypt then and things, and Suez and the history of that. I don't know exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
But that would have changed his life, John. Because otherwise
did.
He would have been, you know, like his, I suppose, family stayed in Blakely. And, but he got to see a bit of the world and a lot of other people.
Yeah, I think, and in those days, of course, it was very difficult to travel unless you were in the forces or something and you had that opportunity. So that gave him the opportunity, I suppose. But then, you know, the 60s came along and there's no more national service, the pill. Yeah. And the world changed.
About your mum, and you met your mum in that point? Where's your mum?
Yeah, I believe my mum was from Barnet originally. She had relatives up in Middleton, and my dad met her
just outside Manchester.
Yes, dad met her at a dance, as you did back in the day.
And the rest is history. Well, but part of the show is music, so let's get on to your first choice and why have you picked this?
Okay, well, we're both born in 71.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great year for music, but I can't remember it. It's probably one of the best. But But the first sort of memories I get that I can sort of coordinate in my head would have been about 3 years later, sort of 1974. And I remember, like, the theme tune to Black Beauty.
Okay.
Eye Level. Yeah. And the Stylistics. But there was this one as well. And my brother and I had, as little kids, had Kung Fu pajamas. Yeah. And we've got, there's a cine film of us, like, fighting in the bedroom, play fighting.
Yeah.
Had lots of real fights after
sure
that.
But
play fighting with our Kung Fu pajamas. And this was a song I remember, one of the first songs I remember. Yep.
Doing this, fantastic. Kung Fu Fighting, Carl Douglas.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky Chinamen from funky Chinatown. They were chopping them up. They were chopping them.
Fighting, that's the choice of my guest, Mr. Richard Lawless.
Yes, we mustn't forget Hong Kong Phooey came out that year as well. There was a plethora of kung fu and karate stuff from those days.
Yes. Yeah, all the Bruce Lee films were out, weren't they? All
that. Yeah, I've been to Bruce Lee's house as well. Yeah, in Kowloon Tong, that's it, yes. But
is that China? Is
it Hong Kong.
Yeah, Hong Kong. Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing there really other than you can see it's a nice middle class house that he had.
He's got a plaque up.
It has, yes. Yeah.
And tourists, going there and seeing it, yeah.
Yes, actually, there might be two. There's one, I think, on Hennessy Road, which is on Hong Kong Island, where he grew up in a very little, very typical kind of tiny little place. And then there's his I Got Famous house.
Gotcha. Right, so we're going to kind of discover, well, I mean, even like, I knew you until the age of 18, but there's loads of stuff. As kids, you just don't talk about it. Like, so I knew you during that period, but I didn't really know you. You kind of just, you know, you don't talk to each other, do you, when you're like 10 years old about what's going on in your home. You just kind of go, oh, let's play football. Let's, you might talk about football and those kind of things, but actually, you know, what was going on in your head and stuff.
Well, I'm not really sure what was going on in my head in all... at that point, you know, in really young days, if you're thinking of, like, before being 10 years old, I mean, I think it was, you know, life really was just about thinking about the immediate future, what's happening today, what's happening tomorrow, playing out, trying, you know...
Oh, you were allowed to play out back then, weren't you?
Do they not play out anymore?
Not playing out these days.
Are you sure about that? Yeah, they say that, but I do see it. They do, some places.
It's rare. It's, I think, it's a dying thing playing out.
Actually, this will fit in. So last time I was back, I was in Manchester and I wanted to look at my grandma's house, which is that terraced house, a little old terrace, and Quilter Grove, it's in Manchester, in Blakely, and it's a proper little old Coronation Street type terrace. And I noticed that it had now been like all renovated and gated.
All right.
But beyond the gate, all these kids were skipping and playing out just like they did in the old days. And one of them was like, why are you looking at my house, mister?
Yeah, was you getting you're looking dodgy?
I said, my grandmother used to live here. And she, you know, a little kid, she says, oh, I'm sorry. I says, it's all right. It's okay. I just came to have a look at it. But they were all playing out just like I always imagined northern kids doing hopscotch and stuff.
Well, they're behind the gate, so it's seen as safe. And,
how about that?
Yeah.
I suppose you're right.
I mean, we were lucky, weren't we? It was the Pikefold school we went to. I thought it was a great school, wasn't it? It was good teachers, good people. And it was like, you know, classes were still probably about 30, but... Mm. We had a nice community there, I thought, and you know, it was great. I mean, and then we both went to the same secondary school, which was not as great, was it? For boys.
You go back to the first one, the primary school. I believe it was kind of like a prefab school that was put up after World War II. And wasn't meant to last very long, but it actually lasted a very long time until... When did it get pulled down? Recently.
And they moved
building. And it looked like it was made of wood or something. It's like a wooden facade, at least. But it was great. And no complaints. I loved that school and the memories of it and the classes and the kids. And you'd have a big old radio on the wall with like one switch. I don't know if we must have listened to it at some point.
Yeah, we would have done, wouldn't we? We had trips away, weren't we? We'd go to Linnet Clough in Derbyshire. Mm-hmm. Did you do?
Yes.
Yeah, it was great. Great times, great.
Yeah. Just. Yeah.
But the, should we move on to the secondary school days?
Well, all right, yeah. I tell you what, before we do, I'd say
you
that...
You wanted to talk about football as well, didn't you?
No, not especially, but in those years. Because you're asking me about growing up, so one of the big parts of growing up, and I'm sure for lots of people, wherever they are in England, like especially like Sheffield as well, is that, you know, you went to football matches and... I never particularly wanted to go to football matches, but it was deemed by my family that I would be going to football matches. So, from about 1977 to 1982, we had season tickets at Main Road for Man City, so I'd have to go. Yeah. I didn't really want to go because City weren't very good, and they was always languishing at the bottom of Division 1 most of the time, but...
So I still am a Man United fan.
Ah, well. But, yes. But did you go?
Yeah, all right, don't start. Yes, I had a season ticket.
Right.
A bit later, though, we used to go occasionally at that time. We'd probably go like 3 or 4 times a season at that point because we was doing other stuff, which, anyway, I remember I played chess quite a lot for Manchester, and There's always on a
didn't I beat you at chess?
What? No, never.
You were just going to say once then, weren't you? Because I did. I'm remembering it now. Yeah. I did. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
We'll have a game later.
No, you beat me now for sure.
No, but I never got to go to football, but when I was a bit older, like kind of 14, 15, I used to go, season ticket stuff, So, so I did go.
But I remember just how cold it was all the time, and I was always freezing, and you could just see the floodlight with all the rain coming across it. And then we'd get back to my grandparents' house at the end of it, like with Dukes of Hazzard on or something, and my granddad had poke his head round the chair like, how'd you get on or something? Oh, we lost 3-1, granddad. he said something that rhymes with city that begins with SH.
Yeah.
And then he'd say, were there many there? And I was like, I didn't count them, granddad, I don't know. But it was usually just cold and miserable. Yeah. And I was glad when I didn't have to go by the time I became a teenager, actually. Yeah. But if ever they show an old clip of Main Road and from that era, I'm always looking to see if I can see myself.
Yeah. Was you in the Platt Lane, Hugh?
Platt Lane.
I do remember you. So let's play a song. I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but we have to get these songs in.
Your
next song is
perhaps
a bit later on in life, but we can talk about it.
All right, so, I mean, I wasn't a great fan of 80s music. I was always listening to, like, Elvis, dare I say. You can say that now, but you couldn't say it in the 80s.
The people look at you weird going, Elvis,
they did at the time. Yeah. Now I'm, people will say, my favourite Elvis song is this and that. I don't believe I'm hearing this. Yeah. People like him now. But anyway, I was sort of already a retro, when I was growing up.
You're
but
7 years old, weren't you, loving Elvis?
I didn't really enjoy sort of contemporary music until I remember someone giving me a tape when it said Stone Roses on it, and they said, you might like this. And I did, and it was like such a breath of fresh air that you could, they've got it, yes. So
it's the same thing. I think I had the same tape in it. It was like a bootleg tape that people just passed to each other.
Well, I think it
copied it.
People would copy stuff, but yes. And I thought, now things are changing. That's good. Yeah.
So we'll play Made of Stone by the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
Just
Yes, Made of Stone by Stone Roses. I'm glad we got some Manchester music in, Rich. Mm. I'm a big fan of Stone Roses. They were so different when they first came out, weren't it?
Yeah. Like, never heard. And, you know, that whole rhythm section of those three guys was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we should play it for Manny, who died recently.
Yes,
yeah. He was from our neck of the woods.
I believe so.
Yeah, Moston. One
was
next
it
door.
Moston? Right.
Yeah, next door, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rich, introduce you.
I'm just going to say that, I mean, they were just brilliant, the three of them. I mean, and Ian Brown looked the part as well. Obviously, he was kind of weak with his vocals, but I saw them in Hong Kong, and then because that's a while ago now, isn't it? Since they did that world tour, but I think they were in Madison Square. They did one show in Madison Square Gardens, and now they can, the sound system or whatever, they can sort of get his voice to the right key, and it sounded brilliant.
Yeah, he did sound brilliant. I saw him a few times when they toured again. Yeah. Right, well, let's get back to your life. You know what? We're halfway through the show already. So it's Deserted Island Discs, the show where we interview people usually who are from Ireland and now living in South Yorkshire. My guest today is neither of those things, but, you know, who cares? It doesn't matter. It's my show. Have you ever won? And so it's me. It's my old school friend who I've not seen for over 35 years, Richard Lawless, on the show when we're trying to get through his life and we're not getting very far, Richard, are we? So,
well... All right, what about the name Lawless? How about that?
Well, go on then, tell us about Lawless.
So, so apparently, I thought it was Irish, but it's not. It's to do with the land between England and Scotland, especially like Northumberland. I mean, it's still really sort of...
bit wild.
Sparse and wild. Yeah. And back in the day, if you were sort of equidistantly far from... either king, you were not really expected to follow the laws of the land, and you were deemed as lawless. Yes, it's not as bad as you might think. Yes,
well, that's...
it's not anarchist. Yes, but
well, yes, yes. Well, that's a vaguely interesting story, Richard. Thank you. But what we do want to get? I mean, there's so much to talk about with it. Well, I believe so, mostly about kind of you spending time. But let's get the lead up then. How far can we get you to leaving the country then? I kind of lost touch with you at the age of 18, whatever. So,
Well, I left school at 16, and I wish that I had gone into further education, but none of my family ever had. None of them had ever been to university, and it didn't seem a natural step to do it. I remember going, maybe you went to, and other people our age remember going to see a careers advisor when I was 16. And I was fascinated by advertising and how it affected people and what affected people and the psychology and everything. And I thought I wanted to do that. And the guy said, well, just start as a junior. He says, don't bother going to college or university. He says, there's loads of people coming out of university who haven't got a job.
Yeah.
So he said, don't bother doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, great advice. Yes. So I did do that for a couple of years. And actually, my manager was actually involved in the Stone Roses before they got famous in promoting them. At this ad agency, that was our first, just remembering how I first got to hear about them. But then I left that, and I wanted a bit of freedom, and I went up to the Lake District and started saving my pennies to try and broaden my horizons, I suppose, yes.
Why do you think that got in your head, to broaden your horizons, if your family had not done it before?
I know that there's lots of people who are perfectly happy with staying in the same city and everything, and they love it, and they tell you how much they love their city and what have you. And I liked Manchester, but it was always somewhere that I felt that I wanted to get away from. And from an early age, I had sort of dreams of not just going to France or something, or Spain. I wanted to get right away as far as I could.
Okay.
And in those days, it seemed that you had this idea that you had to win the pools, or you to emigrate or something. And it took some years before I realised you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You actually can, especially when you're young and single, you can actually save up. And it doesn't take that long. And then you can actually go and do what it is you wanted to do.
Yeah. So you did that. So what were you doing? Electric working?
I was working in hotels, like as a waiter and a wine waiter, and then you live in and it's great, and then as a cook, a chef. But when you were up there, there might be a couple of people, like a couple of girls from Canada or South Africa or Australia who are traveling the world, and you got like, wow, really, you've been all those places and work. Yeah, and then we'll be off, you know, and we'll be going around Europe, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And it just got me thinking. And I did meet a girl from South Africa who invited me to go and stay with her.
Okay.
And I was talking to you before, and you've been to South Africa. I found out that I spent 6 months in South Africa, and you did too. That was my first kind of big trip away when I was 21. And it was the time, you would remember this as well, it was the time when it hadn't quite become what it had now.
So it was changing.
It was changing. Like De Klerk was still a white government, but they had agreed to reform.
To work towards the elections and stuff. So you're saying you met Desmond Tutu there, yeah?
That was a bit just before I left. He was down on the beach doing he was the Archbishop of Cape Town, for people who might not know. He was in on the news a lot in the 90s and 80s. He shook my hand and said, and greeted me in Hebrew, because he must have assumed I was Jewish.
Okay.
Fair enough. I had black hair and not a very prominent jawline. I don't know, for whatever reason. I certainly didn't have a skull cap on or anything. But, and he was very nice to me and
amazing.
Shook my hand.
I mean, the man is a legend, wasn't he? He was at the forefront of that campaign when he's alongside Nelson Mandela to make that change, wasn't it? So it's amazing you got to see him.
It was a very tricky country, you know. It was I got a job in a place called East London where it was a very sort of poor white community, and they still had a white beach and a black beach and things like that. And it seemed the ones who were the poorer end of the white spectrum were the ones with the most problems about the reforms and things. And I worked on this bar where you would see, there was guns, there was knives. It was, I can't believe that I worked there for 6 months. But I remember coming in and seeing some guy just had his throat slashed and his head on the bar. And the other barman had done it, who I was sharing the shift with. I was just sort of regarded as sort of pommy.
Yeah.
Pommy, get me my beer. But I did make friends. I had a great time there as well. I shouldn't say I did make friends, obviously. And it was from a girl I met on the train who got me the job. And that's a lovely train ride from Joburg down to the coast as well, through the desert. So, but, yeah.
Well, I mean, your next song is from that era, is it?
Yeah, so I was going to... One thing I was going to say is that on the bar they would ask for this guy called Rodriguez, and I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
And I got to like him, and I came back to England and asked HMV, have you got any Rodriguez? They'd be like, never heard of him.
Yeah.
And everyone said, oh, he died on stage, and no one could check because no one had an internet. And years later, they found him, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Now I saw the documentary. Yeah,
that was amazing.
Amazing, yeah. So, but like you say, it was someone we'd never heard of. It was actually, they had a big still have a big documentary festival in Sheffield called Sheffield Docfest. And the premiere of that documentary in the UK was at the Sheffield Docfest, and we were talking to the guy that had orchestrated the curator of the festival, and he said, "Oh, I've got Rodriguez. He's going to come and play here tonight." And we were going, "Who's Rodriguez?" And he was going, yeah. "What do you mean you don't know Rodriguez?" He couldn't understand it. He was Australian fella, and
was he popular there in Australia as well?
As well, but yeah. Mostly South Africa, wasn't it? Yeah. So he was like, "So this guy's going, oh God, I've built this fella, and he's coming all the way from America, and no one's heard of him and stuff." Mm. But in the end, it was an amazing documentary, an amazing
yeah,
album.
Yeah, it's a real
And Rodriguez played live in Sheffield that night. So he's must be over 10 years ago, longer. It must be 15 years ago, probably longer when it first came out. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, let's play the song, eh? So it's Sugar Man, Rodriguez.
Sugar man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar man, met a false friend on a lonely, dusty road. Lost my heart when I found it. It had turned to dead black coal. Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar man, you're the answer that makes my questions disappear. Sugar man, 'cause I'm weary of those double games I hear. Sugar man, sugar man, sugar man. Sugar man, sugar man, sugar man, sugar man.
Sugar Man, Rodriguez, great album, isn't it? Like, and if people have not seen that documentary, check it out. It's an amazing story, isn't it? How he was like so famous in South Africa.
He discovered, wasn't he, on a building site?
He didn't know he was famous in South Africa, did he? He was giving up on music.
He wasn't just famous; he was legendary. He was someone who had disappeared and he didn't know where he was. He thought he must be dead.
Yeah,
and then he came back to life.
He did. So let's get back to you, Rich. I know you keep trying to not talk about you. I'm finding this with you that you anything but talk about you. But so we've got to you being in South Africa, and then why did you leave South Africa? Was it just and where did you go after that?
Yeah, it was 6 months, which seemed long enough at the time, and I thought, wow, I'll come back and I'll do other stuff and I'll be changed and I'll be, I don't know, but my ticket was for 6 months, and then I came back to Manchester, and I thought, what the hell am I doing back here again? You've got to find a job, and you find yourself feel different from other people that you're working with because you've been away and since, you've got other things in your head, and it felt harder to fit back in. And after a year or two, it might have been two or three, but I thought, right, that's it. I'm 25. I'm getting old. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, you are. Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'll nip back up to the Lake District and I'll save every penny. And I worked as a chef in a place in Bowness, which is, if anyone knows the Lake District, yeah, that's kind of the busiest part. And I saved up my money, and Hong Kong kept coming up through in my life. I remember there was a guy who washed the dishes there who had been a music teacher in Hong Kong, and I remember reading a Sunday supplement about Chris Patten being the last governor of Hong Kong,
yeah,
and it just kept sort of, maybe it was in the news a bit.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, I came back to Manchester one night to visit Mum, and I met a guy at the train station who I remembered, and I said, "Hey, how are you?" And he was a neighbour, and he said, "Yeah, all right." And he was a Colombian Mancunian, by the way.
Okay.
Yes, so I can't do his accent, but yeah, anyway, he said,
probably best not to try.
He said, I asked him about his family, because they've gone to Hong Kong, and so is so-and-so, and so-and-so, and he's named all these people I used to know. He said, they've all gone to Hong Kong. And I was like, wow. He said, yeah, it's coming to the end of the British Empire there, you know, the handovers in 7 or 8 months away. This would be the end of 96. And I was like, right. I said, can I come?
Yeah.
And so four people had gone, and then we were the next four, and we were all going to stay in this apartment together, eight of us,
yeah,
in Hong Kong.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you didn't have much of a plan of where you're going to work or how long you're going to stay for? Or?
No. No, I didn't at all. And I didn't even, you know, again, before the internet, all you knew of Hong Kong was the skyscrapers. And they told me we would be staying on an island. We'd have to go to another island. So I thought, okay, it'll be another island like Hong Kong with skyscrapers. But it wasn't. It was this, if anyone's got their, you know, wants to type on their keyboard, Lama Island, L-A-M-M-A, Island, you'll see just how different it is from anything you would have imagined from Hong Kong. It was like this unbuilt up, hippie kind of El Dorado, really, sort of thing. And I couldn't believe it when I got there. Like, I was exhausted from the flight. Left Manchester in the freezing cold January, and it was this beautiful, like, tropical day, and this island, and everyone having barbecues, and I just thought, wow,
sounds amazing.
This is all right. It's better than I thought. Yeah,
and so you stayed, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, did, and there was so much work and things available, you know, you couldn't.
So were you allowed to work as a British citizen? Is that
yeah,
why you're allowed
yeah,
to?
You, yeah. yeah, straight away you went to immigration, and they, I remember them saying, like, okay, then this is your ID card, and you can enjoy the facilities of Hong Kong. They asked me what I did for a living. They said, why don't you try down there?
Like, yeah, yeah, very helpful of you. Yeah, yeah.
And it was the last, they were still all British faces in the government positions and things.
So was it end of 96 you went then? Or January
97. And the handover was in the end of June.
Yeah.
So we had 6 months of it. And
what was it like when it was actually handing over then?
Well, just like in the lead up to it, everyone is just like trying to have as much fun as possible.
Okay.
You know, they don't know what's going to happen at the handover. Everyone's got these different opinions of what it'll be like, they'll be really strict. It'll be like North Korea. No, it'll be like Singapore. They all had these different views, but we didn't know. And a lot of people who'd been there for a long time were leaving. But for us who'd just got there, I was like, no, I'm staying. People would say, what are you going to do? I'm staying.
Yeah, see what happens. Well, let's have a record and then we'll come back to that. Can we pick that up to say what it was actually like after the change.
Yeah, so it was so much fun, and I think this record like sort of shows how much fun you would get up again every day somehow. I don't know how we did it, but it was great.
Okay, Tub Thumpteen, Chumbawamba. Let's have a dance to this one.
Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter.
I can imagine you dancing away to that then in Hong Kong.
I think I did, actually. I mean, I was a barman on the island bar of Lama Island, and we did dance on tables and things leading up to the handover. It felt a bit like the end of the world was coming, but at the same time, it was like just like let's have as much fun as we can before it happens.
So yes. People just joining us. My friend Richard Lawless telling about his life. So he lived in Hong Kong for many, many years, but he first went just a few months before the handover. So it was in British rule up until June 97. You got there in January.
Yeah.
So those like it must have been an amazing time to be there. So like you say, everyone's thinking, let's get our parties in before the Chinese take over. Yeah.
I mean, it did feel like you'd, for once, like I was in the right place at the right time, and I still look back on that year as like the happiest. And a lot of other people who I know were there at the time look back on that year as like, wow, that was really something else that year.
But I imagine so. It gets to June 97, and in my memory, there was kind of a deal that the Chinese wouldn't be fully Chinese, kind of politically in the way they were. For a bit, wasn't it? So what was it like on that, that next day to start with, and then after that?
We woke up the next day and everything was, you know, everything around you still looked the same. It's like, we're here.
You're in China now.
There's no troops marching down the street or anything. It's, I mean, it was eerie, and but as we sort of woke up pretty late, I can remember that, but as we started to realise things haven't changed that much. It was very gradual, really.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Richard, we are running out of time to rush, but just I want to get to the point, I suppose. What there have been protests, haven't there, in more recent years about the Chinese government and things.
Yeah.
What's your take on that, or what have you seen of that?
That was really the worst time that I've experienced. That was when I really wanted to leave. I mean, I think those people, I think they were very naive, really. They were students. They felt they had demands on the Chinese government, and you know, they I remember going in shopping malls and things and seeing, gangs of masked teenagers just smashing it to bits, and the police didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what to do. We were terrified. It went on all through 2019. Yeah. It was terrifying. I was on a train that was being stoned, and we were jam-packed, and it was like 9/11 some days. It was really scary. I didn't like it at all. I thought, as I say, I think it was very naive that they would say, we demand independence and we demand this and that. I mean, come on, it's China. They're not going to do that for you. You know, all you're going to do is wind them up and make it more serious. And it is stricter now. I'm happy to go back there. I think it's still a great place, but they will play the Chinese national anthem in schools and things, and because there's an English teacher, and they have to do that. And they've taken away liberal studies and things. So it has changed it. It has made, it's made it stricter because it's... And it was a difficult time because people who fell out with each other about their differences of opinions over something
what's
like
that
this.
It's beyond, No. Well, we're going to have to play your last song, but I just wanted to see what you're up to these days. So you come back to England to look after your mum. So your mum's not so good.
Yeah, mum's got vascular dementia. I've been learning quite a bit about that and watching the effects of it. And she's a happy lady. I mean, she's still physically healthy. She toddles around Faversham Town. I haven't spent much time with her, obviously, from being a kid. And now it's my time to look after her. And she will have to go into care. And that's a problem that a lot of people sort of face. And it's a tough decision. When to do it, because it's so expensive, and and where to go, and my brother and I decided she might be happier back up in Lancashire, up in
So your brother's still in Manchester,
So mum still has fond memories of Lancashire, and it's marginally less expensive than the south.
Well done doing that. But and you've been working chefing again in England when you've been here? Yeah,
a little bit, not much. I've had a couple of stints, thinking it might be like it was back in the day, but it wasn't quite.
So do you think you go back to Hong Kong? You're saying you've got a partner who's gone, say?
I was previously married to an English girl, but now I live with I've been with this Japanese lady for 20 years called Nayoko, and she's there, be going back. But I'll see you next week in Prague, which would be nice.
Oh, that's nice. A little bit break and meet in Prague.
And I can't believe how quick this hour's gone by.
It has gone very quick, hasn't it?
We need another 3 hours, Ben.
Well, we are going to go to the Irish Triangle. I think we're only going to do two of the pubs.
Right, it's 8 o'clock. We've got 3 hours.
It's then, a school's we? Night.
Should we take our microphones?
Yes, we've got a lot of plenty to talk about. Right. So we'll carry on. It's been amazing. Thank you so much. What's your last song then? Introduce your last song.
I spend a lot of time on this Lama Island, and I've been over it hundreds of times, and there's a lot of little villages there. And when I've been travelling in Nepal or India, it's great to get to a little village in the mountains. And that's when I feel most at peace in trekking and hiking and what have you. And this just calms me down, this song. It's very nice.
So thanks so much, Richard. So it's Little Village, Van Morrison.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Little village, baby. They're large enough to be a town. From a little village, baby. They're large enough to be a town. You gotta get that way from the city. It's gonna bring you down. There's a voice of the silence. and an evening in a long cool summer night. Hear the voice of the silence in the evening in the local summer night. Help me not to worry, everything gonna be alright. There's only two kinds of truth, baby, let's get it straight from the start. There's only two kinds of truth, let's get it straight from the start. Is that what you believe? Baby, in your head and your heart. Singing soft and low. Hey, the bell's ringing. Watch it, we're singing soft and low. We up in the mountain, little village in the snow. Just enough to magnetize the leaves. Wailing in the forest, just enough to magnetize the leaves. Come on, baby,